All right. My suggestion is, since I'm not hearing back from Renee, why don't we continue with the agenda, so as not to waste time? Do we have Eileen Rosen, Audit Committee Chair?
I just left a message, Olina, and I texted just now as well. But it's not common for Eileen's voicemail to be on. So, but there's Renee. Renee just came.
Oh, great. Renee, we're ready for you.
Okay.
Great. Hi.
Hi. So today we had the paper ballot tabulation, a very small number, about 1% of the total. And the results, we hope to get them by tomorrow afternoon, but I talked to the vendor and we technically, for the contract, it's 24 hours from the time of getting the paper ballots tabulated. And so that is basically tomorrow afternoon, but you know they're also East Coast, so it was the end of the business day, so it's either going to be tomorrow or Monday. Right now we're looking at, and I don't think these numbers will change, about 27% turnout for listeners out of around 44,000, 42% turnout for staff out of 1,035. And what I've been doing is trying to determine a margin of error to basically above which, irrespective of the direction that it goes, there shouldn't be any questions whether or not, for example, members who didn't get their ballot for one reason or another, whether or not that would have made a difference. And the margin of error takes into account the provisional ballots and the number of those cast, and those were about 187. And also some minor database errors that we actually have discovered, one at KPFK, that affected donations that came in on the very, very last day. But we're actually looking at those. I talked to Terry today, and we're looking at those in detail and going over basically reviewing every single request that came in that was unverified and making sure that those were indeed non-members and not people that were missed because they weren't essentially captured in the first in the export because of this database integration issue, essentially with one of the online pledge, I guess, software. And so, but I think still the errors are pretty small, and we had about I received about 4,000 over around 4,100 ballot requests, 700 of which only were sent to membership for verification, and 400 of those 700 were found not to be eligible. The rest of the thousands, you know, essentially, which was around 35, 36, might know, 3,400, those were members that were already in the database, and just either had missed the email or the postcard. They didn't, you know, they hadn't seen the postcard or something, or they were requesting a paper ballot, which is also a pretty small percentage. So let's see, what else do I have to say here? Yeah, probably a couple hundred members were added for household ballots, not really very many more than any other year. A lot of the household members were already included. I think a lot of people who thought they were members actually had donated outside of the dates, and people didn't understand, you know, that they couldn't just donate up to the very day, last day, you know. So we had requests coming in from members who literally had just donated, and you know, were like, "Oh, I don't get to vote," you know. Well, nope, sorry. So I think, you know, there that is to be noted, that there really needs to be a lot more, you know, member education about, one, when they sign up, what it means, you know, So what getting a Pacifica membership means, and you know, voting and this, that, and the other, that we should, you know, be doing better. And then also, you know, making sure people understand, you know, that there's always going to be a time frame of eligibility. So that has to be, you know, better communicated. I think that's it right now for me. So, yeah.
Thank you so much, Renee. I will take a stack now for questions.
Link to the stack.
Anybody else?
James.
Go ahead. And have Julie and James. Anyone else as of now?
Chris Corey.
Chris, okay. All right, let's go. Let's start. Julie, go ahead.
Thanks. Renee, if someone was determined to be ineligible, say they donated outside of the window, did you notify them that that was the case? Thanks.
By and large, yes. That has been my method. When it got down to the last like few days, I was really crunched with time. So, you know, it's just in that case, I didn't do it consistently and I should have, but it was just, and then the thing is people, even if I did it, then people didn't see it until too late anyway, you know, to even respond to it, you know? So, but that is the method that I do, you know, and then that way they have a at least one opportunity, but I don't tell them many times. I say it once, and if they miss the email, you know, I just can't send many, many emails, but I yeah.
No, that's fair. Thank you.
James, you have the floor.
Thank you, Paulina. You mentioned the household members, and you said there were a couple of hundred of them. And I wonder if you could just briefly update me or, you know, clarify the status of that. I understand that about 620 household members went to the arbiter, and they determined that, or it was determined that those ballots would be sent out and then they would be kept separate and counted if they would make a difference. And I'm wondering if that's the 200 that you're mentioning that came in.
No.
You could just sort that out for me. Thank you.
I have my own method of capturing household members. And that's one of the main purposes of having the ballot request form, you know, essentially, I don't just add household members. They have to apply. And then I take that ballot request. I check in the database, and then I send it to each membership department for verification. And then, once I get response from the membership department, then I send to the vendor, add this person, right? So those 200 or so, maybe 300 that were added, that were members, that were household members, were added through that process. The provisional ballots, of which there's a ton of overlap with the member lists that are already getting ballots, that's was what the arbitrator ordered to happen. You know, it was basically a list of people that actually are, a lot of them are already on the list, because I got a lot of confused members, you know, like, why are you sending me another ballot? And I'm like, no, this is the provisional ballot, blah, blah, blah. Make sure you cast the official ballot, right? Don't just cast the provisional ballot. Make sure you cast the official ballot, because so on and so forth. So the provisional ballots are completely separate, and I haven't, you know, there is definitely overlap. People definitely got both provisional and official. I don't know what the overlap is. Those ballots will only be used essentially if it's extremely close. And so within that 187, essentially, a couple hundred, essentially, ballots, a difference, right? It has to be very close for us to look at those ballots. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you.
Because then we have to go look at the ballots, determine whether or not each member that casts the vote is eligible and is different from, you know, make sure that we're not double counting people, so on and so forth, you know. So it's a whole different process.
Thank you.
Lawrence to the stack.
Okay. I have Chris first, then Lawrence, and I'd like to put myself on the stack. Go ahead, Chris.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Paulina. Renee, I was just curious if for the live streaming audience, you could describe what took place today in terms of, you know, what was voted on, what was tabulated. I don't think it's really necessary to state the results, but if you could just, you know, we all know what's going on, but I'm not sure that people on the live stream know what's going on. So if you could explain what the vote is for and what was done today, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Sure. Yeah. So Honest Ballot is one of the two vendors that we work with. They're in charge of everything that has to do with paper ballots and postcards. And so what we did today was open all the ballots and live stream essentially the tabulation of those results. And so the method that they used, they actually stacked the envelopes by station and had those separate. And the first thing was just to open all the envelopes and just make sure what they would verify is that it was one ballot per envelope and it was the correct, you know, it was basically, you know, just one in one, because in the past they've had empty envelopes, they've had other things in the envelopes, but this time it was all very clean. And so station by station in front of us, they just open them manually, put the envelopes aside because the envelopes have the pins on them, have identifying information. And then one by one held up to the, you know, to the camera, the result, and then would count twice actually. So they would create two piles, one yes, one no. And there were two people, by the way, working, and then count them again. And we're talking about, you know, how many ballots? Let's see. There was 42 at KPFA, like 85 at KPFK,
781.
Okay. Yeah. So there was, it was 181 total. Somebody else probably has those specific numbers, but, you know, it favored the yes side. I mean, the results, but the thing is you can't really say anything about those because it's such a small percentage. So, you know, it's under 200 ballots total, very small sample. Yeah, exactly. But anyway, so it was very telling in a sense, because you could see the divisions in how people vote, you know, and kind of, we already knew kind of where things are going to tend towards, right, in depending on the station. So it was interesting to see that, you know, with such a small sample, you could see that. Yeah, and that's that. And so then after that was done, those results then go to the electronic, so basically to Simply Voting. And Simply Voting is really where all of the data is managed, and they're the ones that actually tabulate everything. And they're the ones who give me the final results. So the paper part had to happen first. That's that.
Thank you, Renee. Lawrence, you have the floor.
Thank you, Paulina. Renee, thank you. And I mean, you've been working very hard, and you've been shepherding, playing like the referee at a tennis match. And I just want to acknowledge that your diligence in managing this referendum is welcomed by me. I could only speak for myself. It's definitely welcomed by me. Now, obviously, I voted online, and then someone in my family also voted online, and we both got paper ballots. Now, is that a provisional ballot that you're talking about? Was I supposed to fill that out? Was I supposed to send that in? Because it kind of confused me a little bit, but I got the receipt from voting online, so I figured I didn't even have to open that envelope.
Right, right. Yeah, so paper ballots were sent to members. Like, so the way that I did the first division is I assumed that members that had requested paper ballots in the past would want paper ballots this time around. So just kind of to get ahead a bit, I just automatically, you know, whoever I could find, you know, because, you know, I did anyway, I automatically sent people paper ballots. Obviously, for those who had in the database who are still members that I could identify. And then everybody who had a valid email got an e-ballot, and then everybody else got a postcard. But, you know, obviously there are little errors here and there, but everybody should have one elector ID and one PIN. It doesn't matter if you have an e-ballot or a paper ballot, or it's still all tied together with the same elector ID. That's the key piece. It's like your little serial number. So it doesn't matter, like, if you got a paper ballot and you got a postcard and you got an e-ballot, it's all the same. One person, one, you know, elector ID. So at least that's, you know, yeah. So you probably got paper because you had requested, you had gotten paper in the past, probably.
Yeah, that is correct. And I have one last question, Renee, because I think
okay.
I'm about to. So my second question is in regards to
the Lawrence, excuse me. It's up to the chair, but I just want to say that you were out of time. But of course, it's the chair's choice.
Okay. Thank you. We do allow two questions per person. We're not sending Lawrence to the back of the stack yet, right? Go ahead.
Sure.
Thank you so much for not putting me on time. I appreciate it. Okay. So in regards to the vote count, right? Now, is a cumulative vote, right? In other words, is a polarity of how many votes the no side gets and how many votes the yes side gets, and whoever gets the most votes will then prevail. Is that fair to say?
Yes. And as
Thank
so
you.
Long and we basically need to just make sure that the margin of error, because otherwise then we're going to have to take this additional step to check these provisional ballots, as well as the margin of error has to be greater than, well, right now what I'm looking at is 187, but it's probably going to be slightly bigger than that to account for this other error that we just found out with KPFK. So, yeah, so it'll be very straightforward because we've already met quorum for both. You know, we just the majority. Right. If the majority wins in both elections, that is the sorry, I just went dark. That determines the which side prevails. Right. But the margin of error is important to determine whether or not. We have to take a little more time to look at the provisional ballots also.
Thank you. That's clear. Thank you, Renee. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Then I was on the stack myself. Renee, about household ballots, is it fair to state that in order to be eligible to receive a ballot, a person should have officially become a member at the time of a donation by the other household member? So for instance, if I had donated during the window as listener and I donated $50 and I requested that a particular household member at the time of making a donation should also receive a membership, that makes that other household member eligible. It would not be possible, say, to request a ballot for somebody who had never become a member. You couldn't make somebody a member post deadline just for them to receive a ballot. Is that right? Am I making myself clear?
So basically what you're asking is if somebody donated $200 as an individual and then they're like, oh, let me sign up all my roommates, that technically is not allowed. Mm-hmm. But the way that the bylaws are written is if, you know, I actually should open it, but it's basically referring to at the time of donation, joint memberships, they can get basically two ballots if they donate, you know, more than $50, right? The problem has always been is that stations do not necessarily document those joint memberships consistently. And so that is why I don't make the determination, and I'm very clear about that. And I've always been clear. I leave it up to the stations to determine whether or not that member, you know, that member household, right, has a household of two. Does that make sense? Because almost, I mean, just given the way that the data is collected on a station level, and that's the thing. I don't determine who's eligible. This is what I keep on repeating to people. I don't add people to the list. The membership departments have to. That it has to go through them. It always has been the case. Mm-hmm. So now membership departments are, I think, really starting to realize how important this is. And I think they're recording second household members a lot better than they have been in the past, but it's still lacking. You know, because most of the time, and everybody knows this, when somebody is getting their membership recorded at the time of donation, it could be a call center, it could be a volunteer, it's any number of people who don't necessarily, even if the person says, you know, I want to donate for this person and this person, they might just take down one name. How is even the department, the membership department, even supposed to know, you know? So that's mm-hmm. why we're in a gray area because of the way that data is collected, honestly. So you know, that's why, you know, this has always been the process. Household members request a ballot. They explain. I send it to the membership department. The membership department verifies it and sends it back to me. I send it to the vendors. Like, that has been the case. Mm. You know, and it's this whole like conceptual argument that's going on right now about, you know, this exactly what you're saying. The problem is there's no way to tell whether or not this person actually did say at the time of their donation, I'm donating for two people. There's no way for us to know that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So in practice, it's, you know, we do the best that we can by making, in my case, I do the best that I can by making the person, whoever's requesting it, they have to do the request, right? In their name. It can't just be a household member, because this happens too. A household member's like, oh, I donated $50. Oh, I get two ballots. And then I have to, you know, explain. I see somebody saying, let's move on, please. No, we should explain this because people keep on getting this messed up. I need to explain this because there's a lot of misinformation going on about this. And it's not too late because it's going to happen again. So what I need to, you know, explain to people is one, you know, essentially it's on the membership state, the membership departments to improve their record keeping around household ballots. And that will be the only way that this will stop being an issue, you know? So anyway, I'm done.
Thank you, Renee. And we're out of time. Yes. Thank you, Lawrence. I saw your text, your message. We're out of time unless somebody wants to extend time for more questions. The stack has been exhausted. So in that case, if there are no more questions, Renee, we thank you very much for making the time to be with us tonight. Thank you for your work. And we're looking forward to hearing the results reported soon. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Great. So,
thank you.
Yes, thank you, Renee. And that concludes item 5 on the agenda. Next item is a report from the ICFO, who is not with us, and audit committee. So do we have Eileen Rosen with us? If we don't,
I'll reach out to her one last time. I'll call her again. But
well, then I suggest, is there anybody on the audit committee that would be appropriate for them to report to us?
I'm on the audit committee. That's quite a few people that are on the audit committee. Mm-hmm. But we haven't met. The meetings have been canceled because the auditor could not meet with us. So,
to an automatic voice message system.
She's not picking up her phone.
Jim, to the stack, please.
Yes, go ahead, Jim.
I'd like the recording secretary to note my attendance, please, at the meeting.
Marianne, did you get that? We have it.
Who
Jim,
is
thank
who
you.
That?
That's Jim Osborne.
Jim Osborne. Let me see.
I sent you a direct message, Marianne, but maybe you didn't get it yet.
I am a techno peasant who wouldn't know how to get a direct message.
Okay.
If you send me an email,
Jim, we have you. No worries. Okay.
Paulina, can I just go on real quick and probably tell you why we haven't had an audit committee meeting? It's because we haven't gotten the management letters. The auditor cannot meet with us because they were on crunch time in the process of submitting the 2020 audit. So that's why we have not met.
Okay.
And so, Anita was on vacation.
Thank you.
Is on vacation. Yeah.
I'll take a motion to postpone
exactly
this item.
What I was going
to
do.
Great. Go ahead, Chris. Please go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I move to postpone this item to the next regular meeting.
Is there a second?
Lauren seconds. Objections? Hearing none. That's that. Go ahead, Beth. Yes, Beth.
Marina? The stipulation of it being in the next regular meeting, which would be the first Thursday of next month, I think. If we're going to meet again next week, which I think would be a special meeting, wouldn't it? Do we need to stipulate that it be the next regular meeting, or could it just be the next meeting so that we can hear sooner rather than
later? I have no problem amending it, but we'll have to revote if we do that.
Are there any objections to postponing the ICFO and audit committee report to the next meeting of the PMB?
This is Lydia. Could
yes,
you
Lydia,
hear me
go
now?
Ahead. Yes.
Oh,
go
okay.
Ahead.
Because I couldn't unmute myself here with that star six. I just very briefly wanted to speak to the generality of the fact that we had it completed by June 30th. The submission, it will go in with the 990. We had one of those normal extensions on the 990. The audit for, and this is for our listening audience, the audit is a California-specific requirement, and it goes in with our 990 and the RRF-1. Priority in trying to get this audit finished by June 30th was in order to get everything started with to get our CPB revived. And Anita has contacted CPB. We're all in the midst of all that the auditor is also working on amendment to 2019. And then there's one more item that we want, that we hope to correct on the current audit, and then finish the 990, and then we're good to go. I mean, but this is the most current that we've been with the audit since 2012. So it took a lot of hard work on everybody's part, all of the business managers, NETA, the auditors, of course, and doing our everybody's very best. So a thank you to everyone involved. And the auditor has 30 days to present a management letter. And so I don't know if it will be ready for the next meeting, but I believe that Anita will be here for the next meeting. So however that affects the motion. And that's all I have to say. But thank you to all.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Lydia. Answering a question in the chat, I heard that Alex Steinberg, our chair, was going to post a notice for a meeting on KPFTX sometime tonight. That's his stated intention to me. So if folks want to amend the previous motion to postpone the ICFO and audit committee report to the next meeting, that's still doable. How say you?
So moved.
Is there a second?
I'll second it, Chris.
Great. Thank you, Chris. Beth Von Gunten moved. Chris Corey seconded. Are there any objections? Hearing none, that's been postponed to the next meeting of the PNB, which should be next Thursday. Now we can move on to the committee reports. That's a 20-minute item in total, but we might not need as much. The first item on the agenda is the Finance Committee. James Sagerton, is there anything?
Yes. Well, there was supposed to be something, the KPFT budget, but as you know, we were messaging about it earlier. We do not have the amended KPFT budget. We originally passed a KPFT budget, but it didn't pass. Rather, we reviewed it, and there were some typographical and other errors, and we had to. So we were going to send it to the PMB with some caveats, but then we had time to address it, and we asked Anita to fix those problems for us, which she did, and she reported orally to us on June 8th that the corrections had been made, but she never sent us the corrected copy. And of course, then we got bogged down with the audit work, and so we never got the corrected copy. I have the minutes of the NFC meeting where we approved asking the PMB to approve the KPFT budget without objection. But again, I don't feel proper in putting it forward to the PMB without having the actual corrected copy to attach to the agenda. So having said all of that, I think it's best to put this off until the next meeting when we'll have the appropriate copy for everyone to review, and we can do it then. Other than that, I would like to say that now that the audits are done, we will be at our next National Finance Committee meeting reviewing the financials, the P&Ls, for March, April, and May. Hopefully we'll have May by the time of the next meeting, which is the 13th of July, Tuesday evening at 8:30 Eastern Time. And we're hoping to get through that then. And we may then have a draft budget for KPFK. I don't want to say we will definitely have that, but we need to do the financials before we dive into that anyway. So that's a brief outline of our future activity. That's all I have.
Thank you, Jim. Any questions at this time?
Yeah, I requested a stack in the chat.
Great. Thank you. I didn't see that. Okay, Lawrence, okay. You're first.
Real quick, James. The progress on the KPFK budget, are you sure that budget will be in place after you meet on the 13th, or is it still a work in progress?
Oh, no, it's very much a work in progress. As you know, we are now very late in the year to be even, you know, considering budgets for the year that's almost over. But that has been the most difficult budget to get to because it was never approved by the LSB or by the Finance Committee, the local Finance Committee. And so we have been putting it off, quite frankly, to get the other ones that were already ready approved. But now it's the last thing on our list. And other than the national office budget, which is tied into the essential services formula, which we have to revisit. But I won't say that we'll have it. I'm not sure what your word was. Will it be finished at the end of our next meeting? I would say definitely not, if that was your question.
No, that wasn't my question. I'm just trying to get a progress report.
Okay, yeah, the progress report. I'll repeat what I said earlier. which is that what we need, because we didn't get a budget from the LSB or the Finance Committee, we're creating a draft budget, and that's going to be a melding of what the business manager from KPFK sent us and some figures from a former chair of the KPFT Finance Committee and whatever that NETA can come up with to add to that mix. Then we'll have that as the draft, and we'll move forward from there to review it, to discuss it. And I hope that it will move relatively quickly, because essentially we're going to be using numbers that are already available, and NET will be adjusting and adding to those numbers. And, you know, I hope then, again, since the year is almost over, that there won't be too much debate on it. And as has been the plan all along, since this is the first time we're getting budgets in several years, we will turn around almost immediately and begin on new budgets, begin the process all over again, and hopefully get them in a timely manner this time prior to the beginning of the next fiscal year. We'll see how that goes, but it'll, you know, we're getting it better and better as we go along.
Thank you. James, is there anybody else for the stack with a question to the Finance Committee? If not, we can move on. Do we have anything from the Governance Committee? Says not so. Anything from the Personnel Committee? Oh, no.
No, nothing from Governance.
Anything from Personnel? My records state that there's nothing. The Programming Committee has 5 minutes on this under committee reports. Any report? The chair is Nancy Saibara Naritomi, but I don't know if she was invited. Anybody from programming with a report? If not, we'll move on. I believe there's nothing from strategic planning. Anything from the development task force? Hearing nothing.
Paulina?
Yes. Yes, Beth.
This is Beth. I did request that we resurrect that task force, and most people were not available for that meeting, but Nancy Sorden and I met to lay out plans for future meetings. So we will be meeting again. I don't have the date at hand, but within the next month, and those announcements will go out to everyone who's been a part of that effort in the past. If there's anyone else who's interested, please contact either Nancy Sorden or myself. So that's a going effort again.
Thank you. And if anybody doesn't have Nancy or Beth's contact info, they can write to secretary@pacifica.org, and I will forward it to both of them. Thank you, Beth. Is there anything? Well, nothing from the COVID task force currently, and I'd like to ask if there's any report from any committee of inclusion, which is a standing committee of the PNB, but organized locally at each station. And I would remind everybody that it is part of the requirements of diversity that are needed to be fulfilled for to be eligible for CPB grants. So anything from any committee of inclusion?
Paulina, just that the committee, the KPFK Committee of Inclusion, met the last Monday of June. We had four people, and you attended as well, then you left.
That's right.
So the NETS Committee of Inclusion, and we are actively recruiting for members locally to participate. So the NETS KPFK Committee of Inclusion meeting will be on the last Monday of July. I don't know what day that is right now.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. And that will be posted on KPFTX for interested people, right?
Yes.
Correct. Thank you.
Paulina, this is James.
Hi. Go ahead, James.
Yeah, I just wanted to report, while I'm not a member of the, I have been in the past, but I'm not now a member of the Committee of Inclusion for WBAI, but I know that they are meeting, they are active, and the work is ongoing.
Great. Thank you for that report. If there's nothing else,
This is Beth.
Go ahead, Beth.
I guess this isn't a committee per se, but I was asked a couple days ago to present at the affiliates. I think it's a weekly roundtable. It's the first time I've been there. They wanted to a presentation on emergency preparedness, especially in light of the current urgent wildfire season. And so I did that this morning, and we had a robust discussion around the table. And one of the things that came out of that is that there's widespread interest in standing up some sort of an ongoing work group, probably something like a work group, a task force specifically focused on this effort that would be Pacifica-wide. And I'll be formulating some sort of a proposal for that soon. And until then, if anybody else wants to talk about emergency preparedness, let me know. I'll do that. So
thank you. Thanks, Beth. Thank you for that report. Unless somebody else has anything else for committees, we are done with that. We have no unfinished.
Sorry, Pauline. I just wanted to ask Beth and maybe Lydia a question.
Sure.
In regards to emergency preparedness and health and safety standards and all of that, are there any grant monies that are available that we could apply for to address those concerns?
I think that there are. I have seen some things there. And again, now that we finished our audit, and as soon as we have our 990 and so forth, and we're current with everything, but we have enough of the financials because of the audit that we can look into that. I think that it's going to be true of several of our stations, and every state is different, of course. In California, we have Cal OSHA. They're already inspecting. They found our courts to be in violation. So believe me, they are clamping down. And KPFK, I know we're probably going to need something done with our air conditioning units, because there is a particular standard that is being required by Cal OSHA as a result of COVID and so forth. So there are going to be upgrades, no doubt, at both of our California stations. So I will be looking into that. But then every area also, that kind of aid is usually kind of local, although they get their aid from federal. And then it comes down to the local, and then you can apply for it. But I think our air conditioning units is probably one of the main things that they're going to be looking at as a result of COVID. Now, there's other preparedness issues, obviously, especially after what happened in Florida, that the condition of our buildings is really important. And again, that varies from area to area. In California, it's a lot of things. KPFK is, there is some brush there, but we're not in a high fire area particularly, or at our Berkeley station, certainly, earthquake. We just have to do whatever we can. I think all of the managers have been really diligent relative to COVID, and so that's been good, and that's an emergency we could not have foreseen. But in terms of standard emergency, we probably need to look at those plans and see what each state is doing, and then, of course, take advantage of anything that might be out there in the way of grants, which we're in a much better position to apply for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Lydia. Any other questions?
May I address that briefly?
Go ahead, Beth.
This is Beth. Yes, in response to Lawrence's question, yes, it is significant grant money out there. It's one of my focuses since coming on to both the local board and the national board has been to get our financial house in order enough so that we can qualify for that kind of grant money. It can rival the sort of PPP money that was made available to us earlier, the federal money can. There's a lot that's available from FEMA, but there are other federal agencies too, like Health and Human Services. And once we have all our financial ducks in a row, I'm hoping that we are classified as critical infrastructure, and as such, the government has a particular interest in seeing to it that we're successful at what we do, especially in Los Angeles is the single riskiest city in the nation, according to FEMA, with more potential disasters and a greater concentration of population. And so in KPFK in particular, there should be some potential there to upgrade our facilities and secure the our ability to continue to function when we're most needed in an emergency. So that's my objective. That's what I've been laying out at the National Strategic Planning Committee. And I would request, Lydia, we don't get to talk often. I have requested a copy of
my letter. Finish, please.
Thank you. I'll be brief. I've requested from each general manager of each of the 8 units a copy of their existing emergency response plan.
Oh, good.
I've emailed once, and the second time I didn't hear back from anyone. The second time I made it in a director's inspection and still have only heard back from David Bays, no one else. And I would like to have, if you could.
Just send me an email, and then I'll ask all of the general managers to do it.
Send
it to my iCloud. Thank you.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Okay. Lawrence requested the stack. Lawrence, go ahead.
Thank you, Paulina. I just prevention. You know, there's going to be infrastructure rebuilding monies that are going to come from the government. So I think that's something we need to look at. And also the fact that we live in a very violent society. One of the colleagues put in the chat, what about violence in the workplace and how to prevent that? And developing plans, measures, you know, to respond to something like that or to prevent something like that.
Thank you, Lawrence.
Yeah, that's a concern.
Okay, so what we do know is that in relation to our life insurance plan for our employees, that we do have that assistance for anything for, you know, all of the stress that we've gone through with COVID or anything of that nature to take care of the psychological well-being of all of our employees. We can, and so I was heartened by that. It is part of our plan, and we have let people know. So that should help.
Thank you, Lydia. If there are no more questions, we have nothing else on the agenda. We have no new business and no unfinished business. So I would entertain a motion to adjourn to our closed session.
Can we take 5, Paulina?
Certainly. But we need a motion to adjourn first.
Okay, motion
to adjourn. So moved, Andrea.
Second, Lawrence.
So are we gonna have station reports?
Are there any objections?
We don't have them on the agenda, do we?
No.
No.
No, we don't normally do station reports.
That's right.
Committee Chris report. Is asking for 10 minutes. Chris is asking for 10 minutes.
Okay, we're in the middle of voting on the motion to adjourn, which is not debatable. But sure, I mean, I'm fine with 10 minutes up to, we do have the time. Our time certain was at 7:30 or 10:30 Eastern. Up to everybody. 10 minutes? Okay, let's do 10 minutes. Are there any objections to adjourning? Hearing none, we are adjourned.